Don't frighten us by telling us the facts. 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 We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself. We must apply ourselves to our task with the same resolution, the same sense of urgency, the same spirit of patriotism and sacrifice as we would show were we at war.
For 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on February 27th, 2017, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, North Carolina journalist Paul Bless joins me and Greg to discuss how and whether people should get involved with Democratic Party reform. It's a more complicated question than many people think it is. All that's coming up just ahead on Arsenal for Democracy. Arsenal for Democracy is available for download on Wednesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it from WVUD.org on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. It's Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me as usual this week is Greg calling in from Virginia. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Bill. Hi, everybody.
And joining us for the first time on the show from North Carolina, we've got esteemed North Carolina journalist and Delaware native, Paul Blest. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Is this your first time on WVUD, or did you do any WVUD stuff when you were at University of Delaware?
I didn't do any WVUD stuff. I did take the mic. I don't know if that's still around, but yeah, that was the only club I did at Delaware.
All right. So what I wanted to talk about this week was something that's been kind of a theme. I mean, it's always a theme floating around whenever people get mad with the Democratic Party, but it's definitely been a theme since the election in November, and then also, you know, in recent days with the battle that just happened over the election of the DNC chair, which ended up going to the former Labor Secretary Tom Perez over Congressman Keith Ellison from the Progressive Caucus. And, you know, I'm not, you know, we try to focus on big picture topics rather than zeroing in on you know, specific news of the week these days, so I'm not gonna like go too far into detail about that, you know, and there's certainly some amount of like maybe putting more weight on it than was actually merited, although you know, I think Jonathan Cohn and I have definitely both been arguing that it's not really about the specific people, it's kind of about the factions that they were kind of heading up in that sort of factional struggle within the Democratic Party. But in any case, that's over, that's done with. But what is left behind is all these conversations about whether or not, you know, there's any future to the Democratic Party by people who are frustrated with the outcome. And, you know, you two and I have both had conversations over the past several days. And I certainly, you know, always am talking to Jonathan Cohn, who's not on the show with us this week. But, you know, I talk to him periodically about this stuff. And the sort of like macro point has been, well, you can't really build a third party in this country. Or if you did, it would probably take a really long time. Even in past instances where the party system has collapsed, usually it has taken quite a while for a major party to replace it. And usually that major party is the remnants, the large remnants of one of the prior parties. But, you know, this kind of talking point that some people, critics have of saying the Democratic Party is over, I think is worth addressing and discussing because, you know, I can understand why some people feel frustrated about that. But I kind of wanted to start by getting the initial thoughts from both of you in the past several days, certainly. And then, you know, I can kind of give my thoughts on some of where I'm at with that, which I think is partly an issue of like, what do you define as the Democrats? Because the U.S., unlike many countries, has quite a diffused sort of system. So there's a lot of layers to the Democratic Party. Paul, why don't we start with you? what was your sort of reaction to this, the events, but also more specifically people's response to that?
I think a lot of people are justified in thinking that this was a huge loss, especially considering that right after the election, Ellison started shoring up support from establishment people and kind of took the steps that he needed to take to make it not a proxy war between two wings of the party. Because at the end of the day, I don't think that this is, you know, the DNC chair is not a policy position. It's not a position where, you know, he's going to basically draw these lines and shut neoliberals or, you know, centrist Democrats, whatever you want to call them, out of the party. But he was just kind of tailor-made for this job. And it doesn't seem like Perez was even that particularly good of a candidate for the job, you know, even considering that he wasn't, you know, even if he wasn't the choice of the, you know, the establishment Democrats or Obama or Hillary Clinton. I think that a lot of people, though, forget that there's especially right here in North Carolina, I mean, getting on the ballot as anything other than a Democrat, Republican, or Libertarian is just impossible. There were a lot of races that had no candidate because people tried to do that afterwards and get listed as unaffiliated candidates. So, you know, the Democratic Party, I don't think, is going away anytime soon, especially not as, you know, the major opposition party to the Republicans. It's just a matter of, you know, whether or not you think that it can be changed through the party structure or, you know, by pushing on it from the outside, you know, through whether it be like Black Lives Matter or something like that. I think that they provided a good roadmap because they kind of dragged the Democrats kicking and screaming to the left on criminal justice reform during the primary. I've been thinking about it a lot over the last couple of days, and I still honestly don't know what I think about, you know, where the Democrats go from here. I think that there's still a lot of bad blood, obviously.
Right, right. Greg, your initial thoughts?
I mean, obviously, I think like all of us, I was very disappointed that Keith Ellison didn't win the DNC chair. I think Paul brings up a good point that the DNC chair, again, is not setting policy for the Democrats, but it would have been a very important symbolic victory in that it would have suggested that the Democratic establishment was at least willing to embrace, if not some of the ideals, then some of the people that the left wing of the party is very fond of. When that didn't happen, I think that a lot of people, it reinforced their cynicism about the Democratic Party. It actually finally prompted me to join the Democratic Socialists of America because it seemed to me, like Paul was saying about Black Lives Matter, that there is some opportunity perhaps to join one of these Democratic Socialist organizations and perhaps push the Democrats farther left, at least in terms of economic justice. So I haven't been to a meeting yet. I literally just did it yesterday in the direct aftermath of Tom Perez winning. I'm also not really sure where the Democrats go from here. I do think, like I think all of us think on this radio show, that they're going to be around for the foreseeable future. So it's important that people that are farther left than the Democratic establishment just don't entirely dismiss them, because we're going to need to continue working with them in order to implement our policy goals. But at the same time, it seems like they're very resistant to actually hearing out those policy goals. Where we go from here, I think, remains to be seen. How Perez will court the younger, more left-wing side of the party remains to be seen. How the party will perform in 2018 and 2020 remains to be seen. There's a lot of things that are up in the air. I think that people are frustrated and cynical and not particularly hopeful right now. And perhaps that's just because this is a direct aftermath where it was so close that Keith Ellison looked like he was so close to winning and really lost by such a small margin. And people are kind of sore about it. And maybe that soreness will go away soon. And I hope it does. And I hope it does for me personally too, because I think that it is important that we do have to, you know, continue to consider, you know, working within the framework of the two-party system, which is by all intents and purposes here to stay.
Yeah, well, so a number of interesting points that you both brought up there that give us a range of jumping off points. You know, I think the thing that was not necessarily being acknowledged by either pro-Ellison or anti-Ellison people in the aftermath was that the folks who were actually voting on this, the permanent DNC members, are the bulk of the superdelegates in the presidential process. you know, there's obviously superdelegates that aren't DNC members, like the governors and the, you know, former Democratic presidents and vice presidents, things like that. So there are other Democratic superdelegates that did not get a say in this. But if you just look at the scores of how many of those DNC members voted for, say, Clinton versus Sanders, well, if I recall correctly, it was about 30 DNC members who were superdelegates voted for Sanders. And it's not even like the same office. That was like a year ago. So not even. So we're really talking about literally the same people, the same exact human beings in many cases who were voting on that. And Ellison ended up with 300 members behind him. And, you know, I also am not trying to like overstate like, wow, we came so close. You know, it's definitely it's a loss. But it, I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, this was not an exact rehash of the primary, and that some of these members who, you know, lined up uniformly behind Clinton were not comfortable with going with Perez this time, despite the fact that Perez was being pushed by the Obama camp and to some extent the Clinton camp as well. You know, and so that certainly shows that there is some kind of room there. But the other thing that I think it's important to remember is even it like, okay, well, we still lost. And I'm not even going to say this is a huge sea change or something like that. But I am going to say that, well, did you expect that it was going to be easy to get somebody in, you know, less than a year later with the same exact people voting? I wouldn't think that that would be, you know, that's a bad assumption to make. And so going in the opposite direction and saying, well, this loss proves that the Democratic Party is toast and a beached whale and it's never going to be useful or anything like that. I mean, that's a weird conclusion to draw from this particular event. Like that's putting too much emphasis on it. Although I agree with the points that you were both making about what Ellison certainly could have done. You know, even just having Dean as the DNC chair a number of years back, it didn't really have that much impact on policy stuff or positions particularly. But it did actually hugely legitimize a lot of the tactical decisions that ended up becoming key, you know, in the 2008 presidential race. In 2004, DNC members thought that the volunteer canvassers were all, you know, left-wing drum circle weirdos, according to a quote that I read in a Mother Jones article from, a couple years back. And that's a bizarre thing to think about, that they were viewing it that way, because, you know, today, you look at the people that are going volunteer door knocking, I mean, they're like regular vanilla suburban people for the most part in a lot of these battleground states and elsewhere. So there could have been some big tactical changes. It could have been a good signal. But at the same time, to take away a huge conclusion from this, as opposed to, say, the November election, I think is a little bit strange. The other thing, though, that I keep thinking about is this point, which Greg was just mentioning, you know, that this party is still going to be around. And, you know, Paul was giving the example at the state level. And even in some of the states, like I think Alabama has a really restrictive thing on even the libertarians. So they have a tough time, you know, even getting a ballot line. But the reality is that if we take the leap of faith, which is unfortunately a pretty huge leap of faith, that we're still going to have elections in the future, despite the reign of terror under Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. If we get to, you know, 2018 and we get to 2020, the opposing candidates, by and large, and certainly at the presidential level, will be Democrats. And so, like, completely checking out of the Democratic Party and just ignoring it altogether, probably ill-advised for the purposes of removing Trump. For the next few years, certainly the Democrats are going to be the major opposition party. So, you know, not engaging at all is kind of a problem. I do want to talk a little bit later in the show about reminding folks that there is more to election. There is more to politics and organizing than just elections, which I think has also been a little overlooked. And the Democratic Party isn't necessarily always at every level just about elections. Did you guys have any thoughts on the what I was saying just now, though?
I mean, I think that you kind of nailed it. I mean, for the foreseeable future, I mean, there's, I guess, first of all, anybody that thinks that ballot access in all 50 states is going to come, I don't even know if there's the assumption there that it's going to be easy, but it's not. I mean, if you wanted to even try to build a third party, there's not even any sort of, it would have to be from the ground up. And I just don't think that we have the system to completely discount the Democrats in that way. But yeah, I think you kind of nailed what I was thinking with this. I think that the one thing that I would say is that when it came to the the DNC chair race, I think that people put so much emphasis on it because the loss of Sanders was so bad for a lot of people that they saw Ellison, who had been with Sanders from day one, endorsed him. They kind of saw this as a chance to kind of be wanted in the Democratic Party for the first time. And I think that there's kind of a disconnect because I think that a lot of Democrats recognize that they have to include the Sanders wing in the party. I mean, they're not going to win elections if they don't. But I think that there's the feeling that some have on the left, and I don't think it's unjustified, that they're just kind of being shoved into the closet like the Green Party has for so long. And I think that that's where a lot of the frustration comes from. So yeah, I also don't get people who are just now saying, you know, I want to exit the Democratic Party, but I do get the frustration.
Yeah, and a lot of these things, unfortunately, it does take quite a bit of time to work your way to these positions. And I you know, absolutely sympathize with the notion that there isn't time. I mean, there's such a level of urgency, and I think folks were hoping, as we did, that some of the people at the top who are already there in positions of decision-making power would recognize that and try to move more swiftly. Unfortunately, you know, and I guess we'll get to this in the next segment as well, there's a bit of an element of, okay, we don't have time to go through all the hoops like the way that the Tea Party did with taking over a lot of their state parties, you know, because some state parties really, I think in Massachusetts in particular, really operate on basically four-year cycles. So in order to start filling the, you know, local and state positions that then lead to filling the national positions, that takes quite a bit of time. And we don't feel like we have the luxury of time. But on the other hand, at least for the purposes of party politics, what's the alternative to taking that time and hoping that you get there fast enough? You know, and again, I think we'll return to this theme of time and what, you know, what is the best use of time? That's another thing of people saying, well, you know, it's not worth our time. We should be doing other stuff. And and my view on that is really that it's a little bit more complicated than that. And portraying it as like that if you do this, you can't do anything else is kind of a mistaken assumption. So we're going to go to a break from arsenalfordemocracy.com and WVUD, and then we'll be back in just a second to talk more about this and to talk about some of the, you know, non-electoral organizing that's happening down in North Carolina. So stick around. Democracy. You're still listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still on the line from North Carolina is Paul. Greg's connection has unfortunately is not working tonight. So we've been talking so far this abbreviated episode about, you know, engagement with the Democratic Party and people's frustrations. Certainly that's a theme that we heard, you know, a couple months back on the show when I was interviewing Emily Robinson from the Democratic Socialists of America and the Young Scottish Labour Organization in Scotland. And she was kind of expressing just complete contempt for the Democratic Party and its sort of future course. But the point that I had just ended on in the last segment was this notion of time and whether or not we have time to be working on, you know, resuscitating the Democratic Party or saving it from itself, that sort of thing. And, you know, whether time should be better spent on other things. And I certainly think there's a tremendous opportunity for people to be working on completely non-election organizing. But that also doesn't necessarily have to be completely divorced from party politics. I was posting a little bit about this on Twitter in the last couple days, kind of sounding out some ideas. And somebody from Indiana had an interesting point, which I had not considered, but it is actually important in a lot of states. The way that we've baked this two-party system in so thoroughly into our laws all over the country is such that in Indiana, there are various county boards that deal with, you know, important issues related to people's daily lives that give an equal number of seats to Democrats and Republicans, no matter how few Democrats there are in the area. And as a result of that, you know, he said that his local organization has spent a lot of time making sure that they get good Democrats onto these positions who can really champion the, you know, the needs of the ordinary working folks in those areas. And that's something that doesn't have to do with conventional elections, certainly not, you know, Senate, governor, legislature, that sort of thing. It's kind of an obscure position, but it makes a difference in people's lives. I certainly have been involved in, you know, housing issues and immigration issues and union rights with my local Democratic City Committee. That's something that, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily think of their Democratic Party locally as working on, but it doesn't really have a lot to do with elections. In some cases, it does, because you end up pushing a candidate who, you know, is good on those issues. But sometimes you're just using the brand of the Democratic Party. It's an already established brand. You know, if you call up your local paper and say, we're from the Democratic Party, even if it's a hostile paper, you know, that leans Republican, generally they'll still take that at more face value than, you know, trying to start your own group. And so, you know, a lot of the older, you know, Democratic membership in some places has not been that active on that. You know, they're more of like either a book club or like a soccer fan club cheering for the national team, but doesn't really do anything locally. And certainly it can be controversial to engage in local stuff, because that hurts people's feelings when, you know, when it's harder to agree on the merits of some local project. But there is a lot of stuff that you can be doing with your Democratic Party if that's a viable channel for you. Certainly there are some areas where it's completely outside of the party system, and that's fine as well, you know. And so I don't necessarily think that these are mutually exclusive points, or that like all of your time would be taken up by trying to, you know, fix things from within in the Democratic Party. But on the other hand, you know, if you're going to try to run candidates in Democratic primaries to take the ballot line, or you're going to try to take various advantages offered by the existing party system, you're probably going to have to work with some of the existing Democrats, because otherwise they throw that you're not a real Democrat business at you, and so on and so forth. And that's not necessarily, it's not the most fun thing in the world, but if you just try to, if you just ignore it, that doesn't really help either. And I think that people try to take shortcuts too many times, and that doesn't really work, you know. So that's kind of a one point that I'm making. So I think that part of the issue that I'm having with people saying, you know, the Democratic Party is done or it's not worthwhile to engage in it, is that there's a lot of levels, you know, to the Democratic Party: national, state, county, or city or town. And I think that some people really ignore some of those lower levels or don't understand how they function. Now, granted, some of them are very kind of closed off and restricted, and they don't like new members. So that's a huge problem that needs to be corrected. But you know, if you can get on to your local committee, you can often push them to work on some of these issues and use that brand power. And I think that's really useful as well. And you can also be working on stuff that's not related to the Democratic Party, that's also not related to elections at all. And I don't think that those are mutually exclusive points either. The other thing, too, that I just, you know, it's a little bit grim, but the notion of we don't have time to, you know, work on any of this. Well, I've been in the position of saying that we're out of time on climate change, and we have been for a while. And if I start thinking about that too hard, then I will never get anything done. So the idea that, well, what's the point? You know, it's not going to happen fast enough. I don't know. I don't know what the alternatives are. There's no, you know, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's a sweeping revolution right around the corner that's going to speed things up very quickly, but I would anticipate probably not. That leads into what I have been calling kind of the Pascal's wager of Democratic Party engagement. Basically, it's that if you work on trying to save the Democratic Party and engage with it, and, you know, it turns out that there wasn't enough time, well, there probably wasn't enough time either way. So I don't know what you're losing by doing that. And if it turns out that all the other options that people were working on, and I'm fine with people working on other options, I don't have any problem with that. But if it turns out that other people are working on their other options and that doesn't work, then you're going to be glad that some people were working on the Democratic Party stuff. I don't know, Paul, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that you're right on the money when it comes to organizing around specific issues and trying to push the party left when it comes, you know, outside of electoral politics, because, you know, those are only once every couple of years. And it also builds your credibility within the party to actually get things done. And that's a good thing to fight back against charges that were just progressives that don't actually want to do anything.
Right.
But I think that on the outside, I mean, in North Carolina, the DSA is starting to organize around housing, because housing is a huge issue. I mean, I remember in the Vox interview with Ellison, he said something like, rent eats before food, rent eats before everything else. And for some reason, neither party is really trying to deal with housing in a huge way. And gentrification is obviously a huge issue down here. And housing affordability is just very bleak in North Carolina compared to what it was a couple of years ago. So those are ways that you can influence the sort of conversation from inside, whether it be through your local party committee, through the state party. And I think that one other thing I want to mention is that outside of the DNC chair race, a lot of state parties and local committees are starting to be taken over by Sanders supporters, progressives, the left. There was a Wall Street Journal article I think I showed you a couple of days ago. Yeah. But, you know, in California and Hawaii, even Nebraska, I mean, there are state parties are being taken over by the Sanders wing. And I think that it would be good for that to happen in places where the Democrats are just in such a bleak situation that they really need an injection of new ideas. I mean, in places like Nebraska, in places like Mississippi, in Alabama, I mean, in the South, the Midwest, that would be an ideal place, I think, for the left to try to take over the Democratic Party.
Yep.
But I think that also, you know, pushing from the outside is good too. And I mean, Our Revolution and Justice Democrats and those groups are, you know, obviously going to keep them honest. But I think that all of these different ways, like when you throw them into a pot, I mean, it can push the conversation to the left. And it kind of feels like you're working against your own interests sometimes, you know, considering how many losses the Democrats have handed the left in recent years. But, you know, anything that you're doing is good. And I can't for the life of me imagine why somebody would kind of diss the idea that you can work within the small local or state parties and try to change things from within, because, you know, like we were talking about, you're going to need the Democratic Party for a few major things, at least in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. And climate change is obviously one of them.
This is a point that I was making right after the election, a few days after the November election, which it's sort of, you know, misappropriating Marx, basically. But in terms of your organizing abilities and stuff like that, you know, from each according to his ability, right, that some people are really, really good at non-election organizing. And some people, you know, whether that's union organizing or community organizing or whatever, some people are really, really good at election organizing. A lot of people have a lot of different talents. So, like, the other huge problem with just saying, like, oh, don't get involved in any of this stuff, it's a waste of your time. Well, you could be telling that to someone who is really good at that thing and also is terrible at the thing you want them to be doing instead. And I don't think that's productive. I think that there's a role for people to have. You know, as you said, there's a lot of stuff going on, right? A lot of different issues, a lot of organizing happening. And this it's a false choice to say, you know, electoral, non-electoral, Democratic Party, other parties or whatever. Like, people should work on what they're good at working on. You know, we have these tools now to connect us to all these different people and have those conversations. I don't know why it needs to be a hostile conversation. I don't know why it isn't just, oh, what are you working on? Is there anything that I can learn from that and bring over to the thing that I'm working on? And I think that, you know, I keep on hearing people say stuff like the left is too small and weak in this country to do X, Y, or Z. So instead, we should just do not that and focus on some other thing. And it's like, okay, but as you said, a lot of this has to do with building credibility. And basically, you know, victory and success breeds more success. If you can show that you're getting some specific thing done, even if it's relatively small, often that will get a lot more people flocking to you because you're the effective person who got a thing done. I think that's a tough sell sometimes on the left, because people have this attitude of like, well, we lost again and we're always going to keep losing. And it's like, well, sometimes it's going to take you a while to build up, and you're going to have these ups and downs, and the year where you had a really good success and then a year where you didn't. And that can be kind of hard for some people to wrap their minds around. But, you know, the thing I keep coming back to is, if you put all your eggs in the accelerationist basket of saying that there's never going to be any elections again and the Democratic Party's never going to do anything good or useful again, and then it turns out that your stuff didn't work out either, well, you're going to be happy that somebody was still working on it, probably. I don't know. I mean, some people are obviously just antagonistic about everything, so they're never, like, whatever. They're always going to complain. fine. But, you know, I don't understand why there has to be this level of hostility and backbiting and saying like, no, you shouldn't be working on that. You should be working on this. I mean, you know, some of it's almost like saying like, oh, don't work on that issue. Work on this issue. That people don't like that when you say that, you know, and they get concerned about dividing attention or whatever. But the reality is if you're saying like, oh, you know, don't work on racial justice, work on this other thing, or do work on racial justice and no other issues, you know, that's probably not the productive way to go about having that conversation. It's certainly not going to win people over. And everything, you know, we need to be firing on all cylinders. So just saying, oh, no, don't fire on those cylinders, that's a waste of time. I don't know. You're probably just turning off some people that could be potentially helping you. You know, I'm all about getting people to branch out. If they're too focused on elections, making sure that they do stuff between the elections, I'm all for that. But having a kind of level of like dismissive hostility, I don't see what the, you know, productive value of that is. And again, it's my view on it is that there's a little bit of this Pascal's wager element to it. You know, instead of should you believe in God? Because what if there is God? You know, it's more like, well, you know, if you believed that the Democratic Party was salvageable and it turned out that it wasn't, then we're probably all screwed anyway. And if you did believe and it was salvageable, then it's good that you were working on it. That's sort of where I'm at right now on it. But I also keep on trying to emphasize as well that there's all this local stuff that has nothing to do with elections that people can be working on.
And I think that one thing about going back to the idea of credibility, I think that Ellison even proved, you know, what having the D next to your name can do. I mean, he got, like you said, got a lot more support from people who were superdelegates last year and by and large did not like Sanders. And I think that, you know, among the party activists that I know from Delaware and North Carolina, there is some sort of, you know, whether it's justified or not, there's animosity towards Sanders for his refusal to be known as a Democrat.
Right.
And I think that he's making the right decision for himself. I mean, in Vermont, he can be a Democratic Socialist, you know, U.S. Senator. And I want to get to the point where we can run, you know, independent candidates that can do that all over the country. But, you know, I think that Ellison definitely had a lot more support for that reason. I mean, he's kind of proven himself as an organizer and as kind of a consensus maker within the party. And I think that that's one argument for at least trying to, you know, make some change within the party.
Yeah. And, you know, there's another great example that I read about recently that just kind of underscores your point about that some places you can run as an independent. You know, there are a few, there's an independent from Vermont, there's an independent from Maine. The system allows for that, essentially. There are some places where, whether it's by law or just the strength of the party machine or what have you, it's just such an uphill climb to work outside of the party.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that, I mean, a lot of party activists within the Democratic Party care about that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, you might consider it stupid or whatever, but this is their work. I mean, and I think that one of the things that needs to be kind of understood is that if the left is going to take any sort of power within the Democratic Party, it's not going to mean the eradication of, you know, people who supported Clinton in the primary. I mean, you're still going to have to work with 55% of people who voted for Hillary Clinton in the primary. And I think that, you know, that's another thing that kind of irritates me about. It just seems like a phenomenon where we're sort of just like organizing around a person rather than ideas. I mean, and kind of seen it since Obama in 2008, that you have the people who still can't get over the fact that Clinton lost. You have the people who still can't get over the fact that Sanders lost and are still kind of, you know, I try to catch myself from saying the Sanders wing of the party because, you know, it's much bigger and more diverse than just, you know, one guy. But I think that coalition building is something that we're going to have to, you know, work on as as an entire movement of people who are pushing back against Trump and, you know, whatever the Republicans are doing at state level.
Yeah. And I think there's also a tendency online, certainly, which is a lot of the people that we talk to just not really get out of the house and do much and just sort of snipe from the sidelines and make fun of the so-called normies, the regular people who aren't spending all their time online or whatever. And, you know, it is always remarkable if you end up talking talking to a family member who's just like a run-of-the-mill Democrat or something, they'll be making all the like corny jokes that got played out like 20 weeks earlier about just Trump or the Democrats or whatever you want to have a joke about. Online people are constantly making fun of folks saying like Harry Potter and Star Wars references. And you got to realize that there's a lot of people who don't spend all their time kind of in bathed in that, like, this is so tired and played out. You know, there's a lot of folks who are just normal folks who care about the Democratic Party. Like you said, you can think it's stupid to have sort of a team affiliation above all, but that's what they've committed themselves to working on. And in many cases, they've been doing it for decades. And just kind of like automatically sniping at all those people is not productive. And I think there's a huge, huge difference between the people who get paid an enormous amount of money to be wrong about stuff, whether it's online, you know, writing op-eds or whatever, or just, you know, being consultants within the Democratic Party. They make a lot of money having opinions that we don't agree with. And that's not the same as people who, broadly speaking, are not that ideological and just want to, they just want to see the team win. And once the Sanders wing or whatever you want to call it starts racking up more wins in a lot of places and demonstrating their capacity, especially against Republicans, I think there's going to be a lot of people flocking to that, you know?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, on the base of things, a lot of the things that Sanders is pushing for, Democrats are not very far. The Democratic base that voted for Clinton is not very far from that.
Yeah.
I think the Democratic base is way to the left of the actual, like, people who are running the party now.
Right.
I mean, you can see it in the town halls. You can see it in the activism that's organizing against the immigration, the Muslim ban, the immigration crackdown, and all that stuff. I mean, there is something actually happening. And I, you know, going back to Delaware, I mean, what happened the other day where somebody won by 18 points in a district where a moderate Democrat won only by 2 points in 2014, and 1,000 more Democrats came out than they did in a midterm election. That's something to consider, as, you know, this is something feels like it's happening. I mean, whether or not it's happening within the Democratic Party or it's happening in the broader left to speak of all over the country, something is feels like it's changing.
Yeah. And I think that the sort of addendum to that point is that if you blanket just mock or severely criticize the Democrats, a lot of people aren't going to realize that you're saying that about the leadership. They're going to think that you're saying that about them, and they may just be ordinary activists who care about this stuff and are going to the town halls and things like that. And a lot of them are very mad as well at their representation. So this, you know, a frustrated push, while understandable, for people to just completely bail on the Democratic Party, I think is counterproductive. And also, you know, as some other folks have been pointing out this past few days, if you can't win over the Democratic base, like or just the ordinary voters, we'll call them, the ordinary Democratic Party, registered Democratic Party voters, if you can't win them over, you are not going to take power. And that's it. Like, there's a lot of people who are, you know, they're vaguely liberal. They're not necessarily ideologically committed to the same things that the party leadership is committed to. They may not have a strong ideology at all. If you go around attacking those people and saying that they're, you know, worthless sellouts or whatever, who will never get anything done, well, you're going to be the ones who never get anything done. And that's just the reality of it, that the massed numbers required to push through a left agenda by any sort of standard democratic means is going to require the buy-in of a lot of regular Joe, you know, democratic voters, or at this point probably gender dynamics would be regular Josephines. You're going to need a lot of those people, and so going after them and just targeting them is probably not the way to go. All right. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining me from North Carolina this week. Obviously, an abbreviated episode this week due to a sports preemption on WVUD. So that'll be coming up in just a moment for folks who are listening on the radio. And I'm sure we'll have you back on the show soon, because I want to definitely talk about a lot of the interesting stuff that's been happening in North Carolina. But I figured this was a good way of, introducing you to our listenership and kind of opening some of this conversation. I also think that this general topic of like how we engage with the Democratic Party is going to be kind of an ongoing topic on this show that's going to need a lot more exploration and debate in the coming weeks and months ahead. But yeah, Paul, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFD Radio or email AFDradio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD, WVUD HD1, and WVUD HD2 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can get additional commentary at ArsenalForDemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night. We'll